Hi guys, can I ask for a favor? If you enjoy listening to the show, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It could really help the show to be discovered by more listeners. For the cost of less than a cup of coffee per month, you could also subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts to receive bonus episodes. For the cost of 2 cups of coffee per month, you could also become a Patreon member for early access to episodes, bonus episode videos, as well as an invitation to a private discussion group. You can find all the links in the show notes. Now, back to the show. Network Automation Nerds Podcast. Hello and welcome to Network Automation Nerds Podcast, a podcast about network automation, network engineering, Python, and other technology topics that are interesting to us. I'm your host, Eric Cho. Today on the show, we will talk to Darren Fultwell. Darren is CCDE 2015-41, CCIE 20443, member of the CCIE Advisory Council, host of Init 6, and currently working as Network Automation Evangelist at IP Fabric. If I miss any of those titles, I apologize because I do need to catch my breath at some point. So Darren's going to tell us all about the exciting features and benefits of IP Fabric, as well as we'll talk about his journey, his path into network engineering, automation, coding, and all of that interesting stuff. And I'm very excited to have Darren on the show. So Darren, welcome.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Erica. It's been too long. We've crossed paths before, but it's great to finally get to talk to you properly.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's a small community. So, yeah. You know, a lot of us have come across each other, especially if you post YouTube videos, create your channel, share your content. It's a small world. And yes, I've come across Init 6 multiple times. I've seen your presentation at Network Field Day. So, and also we're both in the Cisco Champions community, and that's how we got this started.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's probably the best thing about being in network engineering right now, I think, is the fact that you've got these incredible communities of people that you can be part of, right? I was only listening to the Art of Network Engineering podcast earlier, and those guys, I mean, they're fantastic. But just to hear those stories week in, week out about just people doing their thing but sharing it. And I think that's so important right now. Things really change so quick, right?
For sure, for sure. I think, regardless of pandemic, right? So a lot of these started before the pandemic, but even because of the pandemic, it's even more interesting how things have changed. I think some people have gone kind of, I guess, what you call Zoom fatigue or screen fatigue. Yeah. So now that not only you do work through a screen, now you play and communicate and collaborate. Yeah. Everything is through a screen. So a lot of times I think in the podcast format or in any other format is welcome. But at the same time, I think people are still very visual. So it's kind of an interesting balance that we're trying to participate in the community, but also at the same time, we're trying to decrease our exposure to screens.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a challenge, like you say. And I think the thing for me was my consumption of podcasts dropped actually during pandemic because I wasn't traveling. Right. And and there was a huge part of it that was all about, right, I'm on the train or I'm in the car, listen to a podcast. That was what you did. And it dropped right off. Now, what I should have done, of course, was started exercising earlier because then I could have popped the headphones on and that's what I've done now. That's great because I'm catching up on all of those things that I wish I had listened to sooner.
I think that's pretty normal because I talked to Michael Kennedy from Talk Python. He's kind of, I see him as a mentor. I don't know. He sees me as another dude, but I see him as a mentor. And he did tell me, earlier in the beginning of the pandemic, I think across the board, because he has multiple podcasts and he's in the community, across the board, it's about 10% drop in consumption as far as the minutes that he could track. So a lot of people start to be more stationary, like you said. And a lot of times when they start running, it's not meant for consumption on like a YouTube channel because, you're going to get hit by a car somewhere. Don't do it. Don't run and look at your phone at the same time. but anyway, it's interesting. So back to what we're talking about. It is a small community. And funny enough, I never checked. I knew you were CCDE, but I didn't know your number. So we were almost CCIE buddies. So I think you were
impressive.
Maybe about 200 numbers earlier. I don't even know what the velocity was, but But anyway, so we're both, I think I was 22460, something like that. But yeah, so we're almost
close, close, my friend. That's amazing. No, I mean, it's really interesting how, I mean, I we'd have been 2008, right? I think.
Yeah, 2008.
And interesting that after that, there was that acceleration right up to the point where the CCIE changed as part of Cert-Mageddon, right? Where everything changed. And we got right up to the 65,500 and they didn't quite make the 35. And then it rolled through to the new IEs and that got lost. But right. I mean, I was lucky enough, I suppose, to have been part of the IE Advisory Council when all that stuff was going on. So we had a real view, I suppose, of what was happening at that time. And it's interesting to see now how people are starting to get back into the rhythm, and we're starting to see that flow of new IEs doing a completely different syllabus and some really interesting stuff in network automation as part of that now.
Yeah, that's amazing. I am totally for it. I remember when I was studying, my whole thing was to get under 20,000 number. And obviously that didn't happen. You know, I failed multiple times. So that was quite an experience. And I mean, we'll get into all of that. So take us all the way to your origin story. How did you get started in technology and network engineering for that matter?
Yeah, well, that one, I might have to rewind that just a little bit too far because it's
back in the Stone Age.
Yeah, it does feel like that sometimes. I was reflecting earlier, actually. It's
nice.
It's 30 years this year that I finished my university degree.
Oh, okay.
Congrats. And stepped out into the world of work.
And your 30-year anniversary on, you know, finished university.
That makes me feel awfully old, but I suppose this is the point, right? That my first networking job was actually while I was at university. It was in between years. I was building networks using coax cable and using you know 10Base2, 10Base5.
Right.
It was
now even remote
bridges and Spanning tree, mate, was a new thing at that point
because they
just introduced this idea of bridges and whatever. So
it was
all bright and shiny and new then, and it was all Novell based in terms of the services that we were.
Oh, really? So it's service. Novell, SPX. What is the other?
IPX, SPX. That good stuff. Yeah. Wow. So it was interesting, but it was the beauty of it was that you could almost sense the network and you could almost feel and hear it, you know, as you saw the cables laid out across the floor, you could hear the collisions of frames on the wire. You see what I mean? And you could feel the vibration as a, you know, if you left a terminator off the end and it fell, you know, packets fell out the end of the wires, you know, you could almost sense it. It was really,
if it leaks, you could hear the drip.
right, exactly that. That's what it felt like anyway. It was really sort of quite visceral, and I think it stood me in really good stead because what it gave me was that real fundamental understanding of what was going on.
Yeah.
Coupled with some of the stuff I did at university, I was able to look at signaling and really sort of understand that. So I was lucky, really. I was always going to do computers when I was a kid. Same as you, I'm sure, Eric. Our house was always had some kind of computers in it, right from the age of about 7 or 8. And that was just always going to be what it was. And luckily, I found networking at just the right time.
Yeah.
To really, I always think that the job of a network engineer is almost like the best job in the world because it's alchemy, isn't it? It's magic. What you're doing is you're making things talk to each other using bits of metal and bits of glass and the air, you know, and suddenly you're making things communicate that you know, shouldn't be able to. And I think that was what really excited me about it, was that you were creating this thing that didn't really exist.
Yeah.
But then, once you realize how much then society started to depend on that,
right,
it just became more and more important a role. And you know, I never really look back and like say it's next technology, and you just go and you go and you go, right? And
right.
And the certs were great for that because it just gave me a trajectory and a plan to do the study.
Yeah.
But really what they were there to do was just cement what I was learning on the job doing the things I really enjoyed doing. So
yeah.
You know, that bit was great, wasn't it? Right. So getting involved just messing and almost, you know, the customer networks for me were my CCIE lab, you know, that type of thing. I really enjoyed that whole experience and finding the right people to help you along the path as well. You know, it was fun, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, since you mentioned like the trajectory, right? Because you were taught, and by the way, like I didn't grow up with computers around around my house, so I'm jealous of you because I never touched networks or computers until I was in college, and even then I was sharing a set with my sister, so right. I wouldn't dare like take it apart, right? Like that means she couldn't print her midterm report the next day.
You'd have been in trouble.
Never until later on I had the resources to actually, you know, kind of experiment. But it's cool that you had that exposure, right? Because that really gave you the confidence and kind of familiarity to do all that. So back to what you were talking about, your trajectory with your career. So if you started out in that era, kind of Apple Talk, Novell, and Cisco, that really was the kind of a high trajectory for Cisco, right? Cisco at some point was the number one, I think was 99. They were the biggest market cap company in the world.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hi, I'm Esprit Devora. I created Women in Tech so listeners could walk away feeling, if she can do it, so can I.
I do not have an inclination if I will succeed at this, but I have nothing that will hold me back.
It's not anything new that women are here. It's new that we're hearing our stories.
I'm afraid of doing, but I'm too curious not to do it.
You have a lot more power than you probably think you do. You got this.
Subscribe to Women in Tech wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and so that was you know, as I started, they had just become, people were just starting to know their name, right? So it was just at that point where they'd created this ability to connect networks together effectively.
Yeah, to translate Novell to Appy Talk to IP proper. So that was a big thing for them.
Yeah, it was that whole, you know,
The networks
we were building at that point were bridged, right? So it was the same network at one end to the other, and that was it. And what they were doing was creating the ability to then take those bridge networks and connect multiples of those together in order to give that broader, that wider view, that ability to connect things over distance, and so on. And that was the trick.
Is that how
all
you
of a sudden go on? Sorry.
No, I was going to say, is that why you decided to go for the Cisco certs and, you know, eventually build your career path? And how does that lead to your current role as, you know, network automation coding?
Well, that's a really interesting one. I mean, I started down the certs route through Novell. Yeah. I was doing the Novell servers.
Sure.
Novell really pioneered that whole certification process of engineers in the server operating system. So it was the CNA, the CNE was, and then they had multiple versions of the CNE depending on the version of Novell that you were using. So I did 3, 4, and 5 or something like that into sort of late 90s.
Yeah.
I only touched the Cisco stuff really after that. So we were doing work with let me think. It was Nortel. It was 3Com. Yeah. It was using technologies like ATM and FDDI and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, someone brought up this gigabit Ethernet switch. It was a Cat 5000.
Yeah.
And this thing was just like a bolt from the blue for me. It was just completely new, completely revolutionary, really, because all of a sudden it was like sweeping aside all of this stuff that was interesting, you know, the ATM switching in particular was you know, super complicated, really interesting and you know, fascinating to see how it came about, but too hard operationally to actually do much with. So you were changing the game there from an operational perspective to say, right, actually, for the first time, really, only time maybe, you were simplifying operations genuinely by actually saying, you don't have to worry about all this stuff.
Right.
You're just going to replace it with something that's easier to manage and maintain and whatever, because it, and easier to understand because it's just Ethernet, right?
Right.
And so that shift was super important. Now, you mentioned network automation and the sort of new stuff. I suppose what we find ourselves now is this idea of, well, SDN came along and network automation's come along to allegedly make things simpler. Now, but in reality, it isn't, is it at all? I mean, what you've got is you've got layers on layers of abstraction,
right?
But under the hood, this stuff's super complicated compared to what it was back then,
right?
And what you're doing is you're basically creating abstractions of the complexity, right? So you're hiding the complexity away, and putting an interface on the top that hopefully makes things simpler to use, but in reality, who knows? You know, I mean, that's a philosophical debate for another day, I suspect.
I understand what you're talking about, obviously about abstraction. And if you could hear the collision before, now you can't even fathom what's the underlay, right? You're completely abstracted from it. Everything's faking. As far as even MAC address, we used to think of MAC address as hardware burn-in address.
But
now it's not even, it's fungible with a MAC address. So everything is ephemeral and everything is virtualized. I think, what do you think about, how do you think, you mentioned, you know, SDN, and I was actually one of the early believers and in, you know, open flow controllers and all of that. And a lot of people make comparison to ATM because of the centralized controller and everything has to register at the same time initially. So what do you think went wrong as far as the original SDN, right? Like, let's just say controller based software defined networking.
I don't think anything went wrong. I just think that the principles are still there that you know, as we move forward. I think the point is that, taking a bit of a step back, I think the network has always had to grow and had to provide capabilities to make up for shortcomings elsewhere in the IT stack, right? Mm-hmm. I think from the beginning, what we were doing was we were just simply connecting things together and they were talking, and that was fine.
If they work, it's a celebration.
Right, exactly that. And then you just continued celebrating because things would just continue to work, right? And everything was pretty, apart from the physical things of cables falling to bits or whatever, you were all good. Okay. But then I think what happened was, as networking technologies improved, as we started introducing things like VLANs and the ability to route traffic between subnets and these sorts of things, to some extent, we kind of left the infrastructure, the server infrastructure and the application stuff behind a little, because they weren't able to cope with all these cool things that we were doing in the network to make it more secure and more stable and more resilient. No. And so what we ended up doing was effectively doing all that cool stuff, but then also having to create workarounds to allow us to maintain networking as perceived by the application. So, for example, and the obvious choice here is talking about VMware and vMotion and this idea of maintaining layer two everywhere and all that sort of good stuff.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
But the only way we can do that safely was to create the abstractions and the layers, right? And the only way to manage those things safely was through a centralized control plane somewhere, which could basically maintain that single view across a wider geography, multiple data centers, whatever. And so this is where this stuff was really born out of necessity. for the network to be able to jump through the hoops that the application and infrastructure teams needed it to in order for them to carry on doing the things that they did. So for me, it was like, look, what you're doing here, you still got devices which have their own brain, right? You still have a switch, you still have a router, you still have those things,
right?
That still have their own control plane,
right?
So the control plane was distributed still, but you just had to have that central point of management for it, I suppose, whether that was pushing configuration or whether that was pushing policy or whatever it was from that central point. And really, that's all we do now, right? But we just do it in different ways. So we do that either through an SDN controller, or we do it through a cloud management dashboard, or we do it through an Ansible playbook. You know, sure. Ultimately, the principle, I think, is still there and still valid. The problem is that each of these things look after only a small part of the network, or not the whole of the network, right? You've got this idea of a network isn't one network. It's a network of networks, right?
Yeah,
without
sure.
fail, because you've got your wireless infrastructure, you've got your wired LAN, you've got your SD-WAN, you've got your underneath that, you've got your MPLS.
Right.
And your internet, you've got your cloud infrastructure, you've got your data center on-prem as well, and you've got all of those things all have their own part, their own management, their own control.
Sure.
Somehow, as network engineers, we have to make sense of that, and we have to also be able to overlay services over the top of all of those things.
Sure.
And that's where the trick is. That for me is where it's more difficult. Is now piecing that together and understanding the interactions and really managing the complexity, because ultimately that complexity still needs to be there.
Yeah.
We still have to do these things. Yes, cloud has made it simpler for application delivery, and so people now understand that they can't rely on having layer two everywhere. but that basically hasn't changed the way people still deliver applications yet. It will do over time, but for now we still have to manage that complexity somehow, and the only way to do that is controllers.
I think you brought up a good point. It's easy to say I'm the central controller, everybody needs to bow down to me, kiss the ring, and I'll tell you what to do. However, that gotten away from the original central point of what made internet so successful, was this distribution and stateless your ARPANET design principle, right?
Yeah.
If one site gets nuked, like the other sites are still operation, and you know, it's stateless, so everybody has this a either partial or complete view of the network. And the beauty was, even if you have a partial view, as long as you could dump it to the next closest point, you still have connectivity. So if you're talking about a purest form of open flow where every switch needs to register, then you've gotten away from that principle. But however, if you want to do the best of both worlds, you still have distributed control plane. But at the same time, that makes management that much more difficult.
Exactly.
And what you're saying is now you want, we previously have been doing it through human. We're that glue that knows the underlying architecture and made it all work. Then now we just have to do it more efficiently. Funny, when you were talking about it, reminded me, because you mentioned Cat 5K and the Cat 6K, right? So remember, there was a time when you mentioned that limitation of applications, so we're just throwing all kinds of service module into that switch. Firewall, you know, you get a service firewall into that business switch. You need some load balancer, you know, CSM is your best friend. You buy a service module, you yank that
in. This is it. I mean back in the day with the 5K, you had ATM switching in there, you had FDDI, you had token ring and Ethernet, all in the same chassis. You know, you could do all of those things and do your routing of your IP subnets as well, right? So
that was
the beauty of those things, and yet it kind of I guess let us into these very problems that we were able to introduce technologies to do the segmentation and the translations and all those sorts of good things that we could do.
Yeah.
But then we had to be able to manage them. And that's kind of where we now have this position where we have to have all of these different control planes and different centralized views of what's going on. You mentioned load balancing and security.
Yeah.
There's another layer right there, right, of security policy automation or application delivery tooling, you know, in order to make sure that you've got your load balancing built correctly, your understanding of how applications are actually going to run across that network.
Yeah.
But, of course, you've got – it's part of this network, but what about over the big one, over everything, and being able to have that continuous view from one end to the other is key now.
Yeah. So I think that's a good segue into what you do now. So obviously, you know, you have a trajectory of now you're realizing I need to have distributed networks, but I need to somehow glue these networks together. Now I'm losing that centralized view. So I think that's what that's the kind of the problems that IP Fabric trying to solve, right? Am I right? Am I wrong? Am I right or am I wrong?
you could have you wrote that segue beautifully there. I couldn't have done it better, right? But no, it's a really valid point that as part of that management of all of those networks, as part of understanding how they're pieced together, in order for you to deliver a service, you have to understand those interactions, and that's exactly where a tool like IP Fabric does come in, because the point of the product is that what we do is we go into a network, we go through a discovery process of all of the parts of the network, not just one part, not just, you know, we don't just look at the campus, we don't just look at the SD-WAN, we don't just look at the DC, and I love the, you've got the videos there from Field Day where
it explains
some of this stuff, which is amazing. Yeah, it's about understanding all of the different aspects of the network, how they are put together within themselves, but then how they interact with each other in terms of routing, in terms of every layer, basically, how the physical connections are, what layer two looks like, what layer three looks like, what policy looks like, and so on. And we basically, once we've done this discovery process, whether that's through CLI on traditional switching infrastructure, or whether that's on API through a cloud dashboard for the cloud managed stuff, or for AWS or Azure, or whether that's an on-prem controller like an APIC for ACI or something like that, we'll step into there, we'll drag all that data out.
Yeah.
And then we normalize it, right? So we take away all the vendor specifics, we strip back through all the syntax. And we normalize this into a database that doesn't just give you the data, but it gives you insight into how everything's interconnected and behaving. And that's then it leads into a whole raft of capability that becomes really interesting from a network operations standpoint.
So is IP Fabric so from my understanding, at least in your demos and all of that, is IP Fabric could sit in a group of software that sits either on-prem, or can it sit in the cloud as well? Or is that...
We're on-prem primarily, right?
Okay.
So we deliver as a single OVA, right?
Yep.
Into a customer's network. You have this single device, or we can do AMI into AWS, right? So while it's a cloud instance, it's within your private cloud rather than the public, right? So important that what we don't do is take any network data outside your network, right? So it's
right.
super important because obviously from a regulatory standpoint and everything, people need to know where the data is going to be. So
sure.
in its current form, it's all within the customer's own network. And basically, yeah, that one machine does all this work, right? So it does all of the discovery. And it does it in the way that you or I would do, right? So if you imagine you turn up to a network the very first time, right? You've got no documentation.
Are you kidding me? Everybody documents their network and it's perfectly up to date too.
Do I really need to answer that?
No, it's rhetorical, right?
Exactly. And a very, very common conversation. But yeah, imagine you're rocking up to a network for the first time with no documentation. The only thing you've got are the credentials.
Yeah.
You log into your default gateway.
Yeah.
You look at what your default gateway is doing in terms of, right, where are all my MAC addresses connected? Where are all my ARP entries? Where are my routing tables pointing and so on? You understand that device's position in the network as it surrounds it, and then you crawl out through that network.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what IP Fabric's doing, exactly, because it's been built by people who do stuff in networks the way you do it, the way I do it, right? That's the point. It was developed in that way. So we crawl out through the network, but we do it super quick because obviously we don't have to log into one device at a time. We can log into 30.
Mm-hmm.
Gathering all the show commands, and that's the other part, right? Is what we're not doing is SNMP queries or anything crazy like that. We're not trying to build thousands of data point queries through the MIBs, right? Because why would you? For one thing, it's hideous on the CPU or the boxes. For another, it's just really complicated.
Yeah, because everybody uses the same set of MIBs too, right?
Right. All the time, right?
All the time. No, yeah. Enterprise private MIBs at all.
Exactly. Who would do stuff? Vendor specific stuff there. No. Exactly.
Right.
But one show command can give you all the data from 100 queries through SNMP, right? So
it's just a pain in the butt to parse them out.
To parse it, right? Which is a nightmare. Which is why a lot of network automation projects actually stumble at that very first step because of that. Even with the tools, we've got some fantastic tools that people have put together to do some of this stuff, which work great on subsets of different vendors and operating systems, but don't work, particularly well on all of them. What the team at IP Fabric have done are basically built that capability into the platform so that we manage and maintain all that ourselves so that you don't have to, right? So we go and we do all of that. We gather all of that, those commands. And we literally at this time of writing, we are hitting just about every enterprise vendor going, right? So there's very, very few that we don't actually gather that data from. And to be honest, now that we've got the model built the way we have, adding new vendors is relatively straightforward, and we're doing it all the time just for customers as and when they need it. But ultimately the point is you don't have to do it yourself, right? We do all that and gather all that data, but then don't just gather the config, we gather the state as well.
Okay,
as I said, all the MAC address tables, routing tables and so on. But then we understand how a box is related to all the other boxes around it. So we can build topology, not just at layer one, but we can understand how a layer two VLAN looks. We can understand what a layer three subnet looks like and so on, right the way up. And we can understand everything from MPLS label switching to multicast to how quality of service is deployed and security policy. So we'll layer all of these things together in one model. So you've got the ability to bring all of that together in one place.
Yeah. So this is not a sponsored show, by the way. I just thought it was cool. I thought I talked to Darren, and Darren is pretty prolific media, on social media as well as advertising his views and different points of technologies. So IP Fabric was named 2022 Gartner's cool vendors for network automation, and so congratulations.
Thank you, really proud of that.
It's not every day that, first of all, I was surprised that Gartner has this category, right? So gone are the days of where we need to explain to people what network automation was, to now Gartner actually have this category. So it's a triumph in the community itself to have this category to begin with. And it's another thing to have multiple companies, so many companies in this space, that they get to pick the cool ones to talk about year after year. So, it's just congratulations. And it's amazing.
No, I agree. I mean, the point is that I think things have had to go that way, because I think we reached a point with network design, right, where everyone was focused on building a network that was resilient and available and had the capacity and blah, but didn't really think of what the services were that were running over the top. And I think what we started and the way we started to do with network automation was similar. That it was about, right, okay, how do we get config out as quick as possible? How can we scale to write to loads of devices? How can we make sure that things are consistent? When in reality, what we should have been asking were questions about, well, what services can we create using automation, orchestration, and whatever in order to make it simpler to consume? And I think getting the Gartners involved, getting people to sort of think about the analysts really to come along and be able to look at the layer up,
yeah,
means that we're now telling a story to the CXO, right? And to the, not the network manager, but his manager and their manager and so on, further up the chain, right up to the top, so they can see the value in this network automation stuff that we've been banging on about for so long. And I think this is really interesting for me to get industry analysts along for that reason. They tell that story, but they tell it to someone completely different. Basically, the person who holds the purse strings, right? So in theory, what that should mean is that we can then start to get some investment in really developing the ideas that we've been talking about for so long.
Yeah.
And I mean, from IP Fabric's perspective, obviously what that means to us is that it's effectively a new category of product that you need in your operational ecosystem in order to really deliver value on the network automation. We talk about network assurance as our product area.
Sure.
And the idea of that is about being able to check that your network has the right state and is doing the right things in order to deliver service.
Yeah.
So you might have network automation as we understand it, delivering configuration and policy into the network, and then you've got assurance validating that actually the behavior of all of that stuff is what you expect it to be. And then if it's not, you've got that ability to effectively close the loop and come back and say, actually, network automation, can you fix this thing because it's not quite as you want it to be. Loop in a source of truth or whatever to describe the intent, and you've got effectively what if you go to the IETF, there's actually an intent-based networking draft to describe this thing. I know it's a bit of a buzzword, is intent-based networking, but it's a real thing in so much as there's an actual approach, and that approach is something that certainly IP Fabric has been a big proponent of for quite some time.
Yeah, I could see what you mean as far as what you're talking about being service-driven or application-driven and explaining the correlation between a down switch to revenue. That was the gap. You know, I wouldn't say nobody, but people outside of network engineering, such as developers, they don't really care about VLANs or segmentation. What they care about is their application not delivered to the customer in as fast as possible. And the people in the C-suite, they don't care about, again, the MAC address or IP or routing. They don't care between OSPF versus ISIS. They really care about how is it impacting the application? How is it impacting the revenue? How is the downtime correlate to that? And what Gartner have done is really simplify that correlation between that purse string to the network. Yeah. And I mean, we're going to provide all these links in the show notes. But what I really like was in the IP Fabric YouTube channel. I mean, your page is great for marketing and all that. But the IP Fabric YouTube channel has several demos, Darren's included, that includes kind of this dashboard view, right? And correct me if I'm wrong, but I could look at your dashboard and on the in the menu on the left side, you see the discovery snapshot. So that's kind of working from the bottom up. So you have the discovery snapshots that you're grabbing the raw data. You have the dashboard that's meant for people to have up, down, green, red lights, that sort of single view of how it goes into your network. You have the reports, so for different people who care about different stuff, go into, they could pick the report that's most applicable to them, inventory, diagrams, and those go into kind of after you grab the data, the analytics that you guys have done.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Do you want to change the world? Former Tesla executive turned podcaster Billy Samoa is on a mission to help you do it. His show Inside Out reveals transformational insights that can literally change your life. If you're a changemaker who wants to make an impact while you're on this planet, then this is the podcast for you. Through deep dive interviews with the world's most remarkable people, your mind will be filled with new ideas and perspectives that will give you the secrets you need to make your mark. Go to insightoutshow.com or subscribe to Insight Out on your favorite podcast platform.
Yeah, that's a really valid point. That what we're trying to do here is, as we've got this automated process to gather all the data and to model it, right? Super important. Yeah. Great, which is great and amazing, right?
Yeah.
That we can do all that stuff. But then it's making it usable to people.
Exactly.
Is having that. And what you're going to get is you're going to get different types of organizations who are at different stages of their automation journey. Mm-hmm. Who will be able to use this data in different ways. So for some people who haven't even started yet, they may not even know what's in the network, that documentation of theirs, right? Mysteriously isn't up to date. Or do you know what? It might all be up to date, apart from that little bit that's known by that guy who sits in the corner.
Yeah, it's always Brent's in the head. Office. Head. Right?
He's only in the office once every 3 weeks and whatever. And everyone's scared that he's going to get hit by a bus.
Yeah, Phoenix Project.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is, you know, this sort of thing, super important to have that and have that preferably automatically updated, all good.
Yeah.
And then you've got that, the user interface you were just showing there. It's super simple to use. It's basically a whole bunch of tables that you can just select the information you're interested in and go find it, right? You can see it's just tabular form. It's like a whole bunch of Excel spreadsheets that's always kept up to date. But the beauty of what the content of those, there's two things. One is that content of those tables is it represents not just the config but the state of the network. You can do things like check to see if BGP peers are configured, but also up and also receiving prefixes all in one view, right? Really simple. Just go, here's this data and get that view instantly. But then you can color code it. So where you showed the tables before, you can color code those based on how you feel the data should be represented. So you could turn around and say, well, actually, if I've got BGP peers, and I want them to always be established. I don't want them to be in a status where they're active and not establishing. And so you can color code these peerings based on your preferred or your intended state, I suppose. It's coming back to that word intent again, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of that is it means you can filter on those colors and so on, right? So you've got this complete control of the data and the ability to analyze that data. But then what you can do is you can visualize this. So we take that same data, those same relationships of here's a bunch of OSPF adjacencies, here's a bunch of BGP peers, here's a bunch of spanning tree neighbor relationships. And we'll take that data and turn it into a diagram. And we can, you talk about again, that business about keeping the documentation up to date. That thing everyone loves so much of every time they do a change, opening up Physio and having to go.
Because that's how that's why I got into network engineering, right? I love documentation.
Of course, everyone loves positioning those lines on the connection points on an icon in Visio,
exactly.
Right? Of course, no one wants to do that. And so Says nobody ever, exactly. This is the beauty of this, because obviously each time we're gathering these snapshots, so typically a customer's going to do this once, twice, four times a day, whatever. They're going to grab this new data, and it creates this new documented view of what the network looks like, and not just one part of the network. So in this case, In our demo environment, for example, what we have in there, we have SD-WAN in there, we have Azure, we have MPLS, we have wireless, we have all of those things. And you can literally trace a path through all of those in order to show hop by hop how traffic's going to get from one point to another, because we understand how those things interact and how they share data and don't share data, and what BGP peering actually, in the impact it has on that, and so on. Yeah. Super important. But that's just the people at the far left hand side who basically just want to know what's in the network. You've then got this whole spectrum of people going through network automation who might need progressively more more data, maybe, or they might need to use that data for other things, right up to the people on the far right hand side who already have this ability to create workflows and with self-service portals and all that good stuff. Well, you can use the data from IP Fabric for them as well, because everything you see on the UI is accessible over API. So mm-hmm. you could just go in, reach into IP Fabric and pull that data out and use it to guide your automation scripts to say, right, well, I only want the routers where the BGP sessions are currently in an active state, because I want to go and do something to fix those, or those sorts of things. So where we can look at the filters, you can do that through the API, and you can then use that to guide the process. You can trigger events as a result of stuff that's happened in IP Fabric, or some of the really cool things that we're doing with people like the guys at Network to Code at the moment, right? They're doing stuff with Nautobot. With chat ops, you can from a chat bot, you can query the data that's in IP Fabric wherever you are, right? From your phone when you're stood in the supermarket, right? You could potentially do that and basically give you access to that data from wherever you want it by whoever wants it. So
I could
talk for hours about this stuff, because it's so exciting.
I could tell.
this is the tool that, if you know, when I was a network engineer, I would have absolutely killed to have this, just because it would have saved me so much time and energy over the years. But the beauty of this is that data is there, and it's just about how you approach getting it.
Yeah, I think because you and I both been operations for a while, and typically when you get paged, the first thing you check is what changed, right? This was working yesterday or X amount of time. So now it's not working. So tell me what changed. And that is usually where that long draw, the friction is. It could either be something in the network that I could know about and go fix, or it could be the application itself that changed. They listen on a different port, somebody push out new code. And that is when that correlation breaks, where, you know, they don't, you know, sometimes other teams do not understand the implication upon the network. And they ended up, you know, I don't know, sometimes, you know, people start opening out old ports just for troubleshooting, and they left the old ports open. So I think that discovery snapshot and time-based discovery snapshot that IP Fabric and other tools provide is really the game changer. I could roll back into time and say, you know, what has changed or nothing has changed. Then
exactly.
The meantime to innocence.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And go back and say, right, well, what could cause this problem from happening? When you've got the data in the way that we've got it there.
Right.
And this works for, like you say, for other tools as well, just the same, right? That if you've got this ability to turn around and say, well, actually, I've got this point here, and I know that it's trying to hit this other application server over here.
Right.
If I trace that path from one to the other, and I'm not talking about doing a trace route or something simple like a layer 3, because we can do that, and we've been able to do that for a long time. This is going to the next level. This is saying, right, okay, I'm sat on this VLAN, so what does my switch path look like to get to my default route? From there, what does that look like to get into my MPLS? From there, you know, how does my label switching get me across the network to the other side, and so on? So right down to that granular detail. So then go, I'm hitting this firewall policy here. Is that allowing me through or not? And so on. And to be able to get that view and then say, a day later, when it's not working, to do the same thing and show the thing that's actually changed in that path.
Right.
Game changer, complete game changer, because that's that whole process. It takes an inordinate amount of time as a network engineer to sit with a pen and paper, which I've done 1,000 times, and trace out that path that we've just described, right? Because you have to. You have to trace it out, because otherwise, how do you pin down what's failing?
Of course.
And of course, you can't compare it with how it was, because you don't have that information from
you. Right. You can only know how it is right now when you're logging into the device to look at it. And that's another snapshot, right? Like you said, you're just repeating the human process, but duplicating that process and make it faster and more accurate, and
storing the results daily and so on. And that's it's about data, and it's about how you gather that data and what you do with that data once you've got it. The way that we do that is purely based on our experience as network folk, as genuine network folk who know and understand A, how you operate networks, and B, how those networks are supposed to work. And that's the difference, really, let's say, between us and some others.
Yeah.
Is that our approach is born out of experience in the field. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Hopefully the story resonates with people, because they'll see and understand and recognize their own experience in what I'm talking about.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it resonates with me because, as we mentioned before, the teams have different priority. They have different agenda. They care about different things.
Yeah.
So for us, you know, we really care about the overlay, the underlay, the actual path, the switches, the MPLS, IP fabric. But, you know, IP fabric, you know, there's a plugin right there. But the fabrics within your IP network.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, those are really speaks to us. But of course, at the same time, it needs to be the bridge that tower the C-suites as well as the application developers.
Yeah.
But if you would play inside baseball with me for a bit, Darren, because we're all geeks. So what tech stack does IP fabric use? You mentioned, you know, asynchronously go out the polar and pull all of these devices and pull really fast, right? So what is the magic of that? What's the tech stack used between the polar to data storage, as well as, you know, visualizing your data and building a model?
See now.
How many days do we have?
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Give me the 10,000 feet view.
You're talking to a network guy.
No, please do.
Hey, look,
go ahead. Let's start from the beginning then. The polar magic, right? Because that's really a differentiator, as you mentioned. You could do it fast. You could do it quickly and accurately.
I mean, but basically, it's down to the fact that it's done in stages, right? So, it's the parallel piece up front, the parallel worker threads of being able to go out and gather the data that we're expecting from a particular device. We have all that predefined per platform, right? So, for example, if you're logging into a Cisco, or in fact, the very first command that things, once we get logged into a SSH'd or telneted into a device, the very first thing we do a show version, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the one thing that most platforms will respond to explain what it is that you've logged into.
Yeah.
Thereafter, there's a basically grouping of commands that we'll run depending on what platform is, in order to give us the information about the layer one, the discovery, the layer two, the layer three, and so on, right? So we gather everything we can that relates to the behavior of a device. If it's a wireless LAN controller, then we'll just gather all the information about the APs, about the SSIDs, about all of that good stuff, the clients and where they're connected and so on. So we just capture all of that data together. Then once we've done that and gone through that process, we can then start to connect the dots, okay, and say, sure. Well, actually, this box here, we can see that it's got an OSPF neighbor relationship with this one here. So we know that they're interconnected. We know which interfaces those are, because we can check at MAC addresses and so on and so forth. And it is that that same process that you would use. But what we're doing is it's just that massively parallel gathering of data. Mm-hmm. Means that you can work on that data super quick because it's already in the database and away we go. There's actually three databases
that
sit underneath the process. I can't tell you which ones they are at the moment because we're always in the process of looking at better ways of doing things. But ultimately, there's a relational database that sits underneath. There's a JSON store database and a graph database that sit underneath everything in order for us to be able to model the complete view of what we're doing and that normalized view. And then it's really simple thereafter. It's essentially we put an API on the top and we use that same API that we expose externally. We use internally to have a front end basically that just sits in the browser and does the necessary to pull the data view and visualize it. So it's really, you know, it's not a complicated stack in that sense. It's not a complicated approach. Mm-hmm. What we are looking at doing, obviously, it's containerized to a great extent, and we're continuing that process simply because we want to be able to now start to look at scaling by separating some of the elements out and being able to multiply them so we can gather multiple collection points and so on. So there's a whole range of different architectural pieces going on under the hood in order for us to extend and continue to build on the capability and the scale of the platform.
Sure. I mean, the
doesn't change in that sense.
Yeah, that's a lot of the approaches that application, when they need to have API parity between, you know, everything you could do in your GUI, you could do in API. The only way to achieve that is to have the front end call the same API on the back end as the customer would. Otherwise, it's just what ended up happening is somebody's always going to forget to put in an endpoint, or somebody's always going to take a shortcut to have a direct access to the database as opposed to go through the API. Yeah. So, you know, the only way to do that, as you know, a lot of cloud providers have publicly said, to have API parity is they have the internal team, both the internal team and the external customer, use the same API stack.
That's exactly it. And we expose that all of the endpoints through the UI. So you can actually see which API endpoints you're using, right? So if you've got a table open, for example, there's one button, the help button effectively, on the table. Click on that and it actually shows you the endpoint that you've used. It shows you the request body that has been used to gather the data that's actually being displayed in the platform. So you've got, you know, it's about as wide open as it can be in terms of us making it easy to access that data.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So do you... as far back as, you know, kind of the tech stack, is it fast because it's closer to the middle? Is it because you're using C as opposed to Python? Or, you know, what kind of middle layer do you guys use? Is that something that you could disclose, or is that kind of probably secret sauce?
I wouldn't say it's secret sauce necessarily, sure. But it's definitely outside of my wheelhouse. You know,
you're a network guy who wants to build that model, right?
You're pushing the boundaries of my knowledge. However, we don't use Python. That much I can tell you.
Right? Sure.
Because it's, you know, again, it's that thing, isn't it, of how... You know, we're talking commercial product now. We're talking closed source and all the rest of it. So you know, it's built for speed. And so you know, the actual code itself, probably even if I could see it, it would be completely unfathomable to a computer science graduate of 30 years ago, as opposed to someone whose job it is to do this day in, day out. But I mean, it's definitely highly optimized.
Sure. So, I mean, I think you brought up a good point. We're just chatting before we hit the record button about, you know, closed source versus open source. So can you tell us a little bit about what your view is as far as, you know, hey, maybe somebody, I've heard this multiple times, right? Sure. And especially when you're working for a big company, you know, whatever the fans or any cloud provider, when the vendor comes in, and that's applicable to big enterprise as well. When vendor comes in, they always put up their kind of nose up a little bit and say, we can always build this, right? Like I throw in 5 developers for a month and we could have a baby. But but you know, we're just chatting about it. So tell me what your view is on that. Like we can always build this with open source tools, but why do we need IP Fabric?
Of course you could. And that's absolutely the case of, like you say, for anything, right?
Yeah.
It's always a challenge one to sort of justify. I mean, because that's what it always is you're justifying why you would charge for this thing and whatever.
Right.
I suppose the point here is that the points are numerous. The fact is that you've got, with IP Fabric, for example, you've got something that's plug and play that you can literally just walk it in, put it into your network, and within minutes you can show value of having that there. There's no having to set the environment up. There's no maintenance. There's no there's no building the development environment. There's no having to do any testing. There's no writing of scripts. There's nothing. The data is gathered and instantly available as soon as it's been gathered. So I've set them up. I mean, we do a POC, right? We do a POC process with customer when we engage them. And that POC, we never run it more than 10 days. Simply because within 2, they've already seen the value of the product. And the rest of the rest of the time is about how they then explain to the wider audience where the value is coming and why it's the thing. So you know, the approach is really positive, really simple, and really straightforward, and really quick, right? And I think the problem that you're always going to have with an open source approach is that you have to build the environment, have to have people who understand and are able to manage that environment. You have to then do whatever you need to do to install the platform, to configure the platform, to then go ahead and perhaps modify it in order to suit your environment. You might have to look at the broader picture of how that then talks to other things and so on and so forth. So there's a whole bunch of things which often we found can take weeks or months of effort in order to get to a stage where you can actually make a start. And then in order to get any of the data out, you have to script it and you have to be able to interact with it in a very, what's the word?
Smooth, frictionless.
Yeah, I was going to say a friction-full really way is what I'm thinking is in order to get to the data, it's not necessary. Sure. You might have to learn a domain-specific language or whatever in order to do that. And I think the beauty of something like IP Fabric is that it is immediate and obvious, and you've got that really simple UI to just go in and get the data as soon as it's available. Like I say, the plug and play aspect, it's one VM, right? One VM can do all of this.
Yeah.
If you want to update it, you just click a button to update it when it tells you it needs updating, and it updates. You know, you've not got to go away and make sure you've got all the requirements met for doing an upgrade and so on and so forth, because it's all there embedded. And the point with this is that IP Fabric is there about reducing that friction, right? And about making it as simple as possible.
I think I agree. So I think it comes down to open source is not free, right? Like it could be free it's free in cost, but it's not free in the skill gap, in the setup time, in the maintenance, and in the in all of the other intangibles, if you will. It's not free. There are different risks associated with it. A lot of the open source project really hinges on a couple of, or even one, dedicated engineer to maintain the project.
Yeah.
And if that, there's so many projects that look promising, and the guy just run out of time because it's not sustainable. You know, somebody who's doing this out of goodwill in the garage after work, you can't really blame him or her for, you know, trying to have a family life. And this is a big problem for open source projects, even big projects and used by, you know, Fortune 500, Fortune 50 companies such as Django. It's you know, relies on a dedicated group of volunteers to maintain that. And for me, because I'm involved in the Python community, I know the Python Software Foundation is trying to solve that by having a more sustainable model, such as, you know, having a nonprofit and have all these other groups that come under the umbrella, so they don't have to deal with the administrative, raising funds, and even paying a few well-deserved, full, dedicated employee to do some of the maintenance. So, back into what we're talking about, open source is not free. It's free in beer, but as in beer, but it's not free as in, you know, skill gaps and maintenance and all of that. So IP Fabric provides another route.
And I think that's you know, there's valid approaches, right, in both ways. Yeah. And I think that's the key, is for an organization to understand and appreciate exactly as you say, that if they want to go down the open source route, there's tooling to do bits of what we've talked about, right?
Yes.
And that's the other thing, is that what you might have to do here is assemble something from multiple different parts in order to get that full picture. What IP Fabric and other people like, I mean, I was thinking, talking to the folk at Itential.
Yes.
Right? Just
well, you mentioned Narrow to Code.
All the guys in Narrow to Code. Right. Yeah. This is about saying, look, you've got, you know, you go down a path because you want to make things easier for people so they don't have to do a lot of this, or at least they have a choice. And that's the key for me, is giving people the options, because the principles are the same. So again, you know, talking about Itential specifically, right? That is a low code orchestration platform, really what it is. So what it means is you don't have to code stuff yourself.
Right.
It's drag drop, put things on a canvas, make traffic data flow from one point to another. All good. But there's still a skill that's required in order to do that, and an understanding of the process, which is the same understanding of the process you'd have to do if you were coding this thing, right? In Python or in like a playbook style thing in Ansible, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's the maintenance of the platform, and it's the maintenance of the thing around it, and the hooks into other things that you need. You know, you might need a module on to connect to a certain other system or whatever. All of those things are maintained by the maintainer. And if it's a, you know, as you say, an open source project, that might be one person, or if it's a commercial company, then obviously their income depends on it. And so they're going to give you a different level of support. And that's super important.
Yeah, I mean, that's just sustainability is very important. And especially in the enterprise world, I mean, if nobody cares about that, we don't need SLAs, right? People are very happy paying support and SLA so they could go home and don't have to worry about a certain skill gap, you know, that may or may not exist in their enterprise. So you mentioned a lot of open source project or, you know, commercial or open source project that works with IP Fabric. So can you just name some of it? I mean, I know there's a laundry list of the vendors you guys support, as you mentioned, you know, that's where you start. And there's also a list of vendors that you guys could work with, IP Fabric, that is, to work with, such as ServiceNow, Splunk, NetMiko, NetBox.
Yeah. And I suppose that's an important part of what we're doing is to set that IP Fabric as a tool in itself. So that we're talking about the assurance platform.
Sure.
Covers a certain functionality, right? So it's what it's very clearly does and doesn't do, right? So it's not a monitoring platform, for example. We're not going to gather telemetry data from devices every 30 seconds and whatever. We don't do that. We're not an automation platform in the sense of configuration push or policy push. We don't do that, because there are other tools better suited to those that are already there. Okay.
Yeah.
So what we'll do is we work with them, right? So we have this sort of alliance program, if you like, to say, right, there are people we work with who are able to deliver this service really well. Mm-hmm. And when you put them together in IP Fabric, they go on and do some really cool, interesting stuff. And as you say, I've mentioned a couple of them already.
Yeah.
But it's the ability to be able to work with, like, the guys at Network to Code, right? There's what we've done with them is we've talked to them about Nautobot and incorporated capabilities in Nautobot which pull data through from IP Fabric and use them in cool and interesting ways. ChatOps, right, has been a big thing with those guys that they've really introduced to the wider community. So what we've done is incorporated IP Fabric into that. So you can log into a chatbot and you can just query the data from IP Fabric through ChatOps if you want to. Using the source of truth in Nautobot is a really interesting one, right? So because that similar to NetBox before, what you were then able to do is use Ansible or another automation platform to use Nautobot or NetBox as their source of truth for their inventory, right, for their configuration, and so on. Well, what we've done with the guys at Network to Code is said, well, look, why not take the data from IP Fabric and feed that into Nautobot so that you're then able to validate that actually reflects the information that's in the network? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, you've got to go through a process of somehow capturing that data and populating the source of truth in the first place.
Right.
Those
sorts of
things
always become a heavy lift.
Right. Okay. So those sorts of things become really, really useful ways of leveraging this data in other ways into the wider ecosystem.
Right.
And those things don't have to be other commercial platforms, right? So
sure.
Nautobot is a good example that is, while it's maintained by the folk at Network to Code, it's not a commercial platform. It's open source. So you know, we work with whoever wants to work with us in that sense.
Yeah, because, you're playing nicely in the ecosystem.
Of course, because why wouldn't we? You know, the point is we know what our box is, and we know what sits outside that box, and we know that people will use, like you say, NetMiko and with their Python, Nornia, you know, Ansible and all of the others, Salt and whatever else in the actual automation orchestration spaces. They'll use those things and want to be able to use data from IP Fabric. So we just work with them to do the best we can to make sure they've got access to that data. And there's a whole bunch of ways that actually helps the automation processes themselves.
Of course, of course. So that speaks to people who have already made investment in, say, Ansible, a bunch of Ansible playbooks, right? You're not coming in and say you need to rip and replace all of your playbook to this new thing. It's, you know, we could play nicely and be a team player in your ecosystem and even have a gradual migration plan if you're, you know, up to that.
For certain things, I mean, that's the beauty of it, right, is that things... A lot of the data gathering and everything that we do is stuff that people would traditionally, and if there is a tradition in network automation, would have used playbooks for and would have used their own scripts to do. And now once you bring IP Fabric into the fold, you've got a way of gathering that data in a whole load simpler than going and crawling network to do it, because you just make the call to IP Fabric and pull the data out that way.
Right.
But you say, as you say, it's a migration. It doesn't have to be take this thing out and now what do I do? You know,
right.
It's about because that data is there, because it's structured.
Yeah.
And usable. I mean, it's all, you know, it's JSON data the way you would expect to use JSON data.
So. Yeah. Nice. Very cool. So
yeah, it's cool.
Where can people find you on social, Darren? If they need to learn more about the tool, if they want to know you more about your person. I know we mentioned Init 6, but you haven't posted a video in a while.
I know, right?
I'm giving you a hard time.
No, the guys will kill me for not mentioning it as well. But
sure.
But, I mean, Init 6 was something that was a project we started from the advisory council, actually. When the DevNet certifications came along, and everyone was like, right, okay, how do we make the shift to network automation world?
Right.
And our idea with Init 6 was to really help people start with that process, to find out how to approach it, who to speak to, and that sort of thing. It's been quiet, let's say, from the team perspective for a while, because a lot of us have changed jobs. A lot of us are going through a lot of that sort of, some more introspective than others, some a little bit louder than others, but we're sort of going through a lot of that at the moment. We're all meeting up, or we're hoping to meet up at Cisco Live
oh yeah yeah you should
in
mention
a couple of months time so
yeah
So that would be very cool. And hopefully then we might get the opportunity to do some new interesting stuff. So we'll see how that goes. But sure. Innit6 has been brilliant for all of us. We got to meet some incredible people along the way. And we even managed to interview Vint Cerf, which is a particular
honor. Yeah, it was amazing that he was able to get on to Innit6 and just talk about, I think he at the time he may have gotten COVID as well.
So yeah, he'd just come out of COVID.
And yeah, he was willing to do it even after, you know.
Yeah, which was amazing. And he was telling us, you know, talking about internet on Mars and all kinds
space
of cool
networking
stuff. Yeah, which is just like so cool. It was ridiculous, but it was amazing. And others that we've spoken to as well, people like Michael DeHaan who wrote Ansible and so on. You know, we've been super lucky along the way, but we'll continue to do it hopefully.
How much bank can he make just selling Ansible? Anyways,
no, don't even go down that road.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's been very vocal himself. So you know, you don't have to look far.
He has a great story.
His opinion.
Tell.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, people could find you on Twitter and LinkedIn.
Yeah, I mean, obviously,
the links.
Twitter handle just at Darren Falwell. But yeah, LinkedIn, YouTube. For Innit6 or IP Fabric. I mean, that's the other thing. So IPfabric.io is where we live, and everything hangs off there. All the information about the product, but also all our interesting community stuff we're doing. That's one of the best things I think about. I'm really enjoying about being part of the IP Fabric family is that we're not just about pushing the product all the time, but we're talking to folk in the community regularly to look at some of the wider aspects of managing and maintaining networks and whatever. And I think that's been really, really good fun. I spoke to some amazing people with that as well. So the likes of Duan, who we mentioned earlier, and Bianco and various others. So all good fun.
I'll testify, I've talked to Darren a few times. Never once did I get pressure into buying or demoing. IP Fabric is just a geek through and through. He likes technology and, you know, we could just geek out hours and hours without ever mentioning any commercial product.
Or not.
Precisely. So before we say goodbye, Darren, sure. I mean, I've enjoyed our conversation. I'm sure the listeners have as well. Any call to action? How do people get started with IP Fabric or network automation?
Yeah, no, that's a good chat. I mean, we again, sort of building on that community aspect, one of the things that we're keen to do is get people, as many people as possible, to actually have a look at the product. So we are, as we've already mentioned, we're regularly doing tech field days, and we're doing Cisco Live. We've got a amazing presence lined up for Vegas if anyone's going to be there. Mm-hmm. Please, by all means, drop in. I'll sort you out with a pair of socks and whatever, and we'll sort of catch up there. But we've actually got the ability to give you a lab license as well of the product. So it'd be for up to 50 devices. You can install the product, stick it in your lab. You can run it on VirtualBox or something. It runs on next to nothing resource wise,
right?
And you can just spin it up and see what it looks like and have a bit of a play, run some stuff against the API. You know, it's a full version of the software, so you've got full access to that. So again, we'll pop a link in here, and I think I've got a QR code sitting around somewhere where I can give you the URL for that as well. So
awesome.
But that'll be great if anyone's interested.
Yeah, it's no kid gloves. It's the full version.
Oh,
you just get it done and then see the value and, you know, decide for yourself, right?
Have
don't just listen to us, you know, just see for yourself. It's always more fun to be in your own environment.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a pleasure. Darren, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for taking the time. And you know, we'll keep in touch, right?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, my friend. And it's glad that we finally had the chance to do this, and hopefully speak to you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for listening to the Network Automation Nerds podcast today. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other podcast platforms. Until next time, bye-bye.